Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast. This week we'll be tackling Laszlo Niemer's award-winning Holocaust drama, Son of Saul. I'm Sam Howlett and as usual I'm joined by Jenna Hobbs. Hi Jenna.
Hiya.
And making her pod debut, Ersi Kaletzi.
Hello.
Have I pronounced your name right?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent, good. Ersi works with us in the Curzon. She's actually a tier higher than us, so...
Oh yeah, but...
Any chance of a raise?
No? We'll talk later.
We'll talk later. So, as I mentioned, we're talking about Son of Saul, a completely different film than what we talked about last week. We talked about the very light and fluffy and jolly Florence Foster Jenkins. This week we're going completely alien territory compared to that. This film is very somber, quite dark, and yeah, it's about the Holocaust, so it's not going to be a walk
no
in the park.
No laughs this week, Sam.
No, no laughs at all. So, this film stars Geza Rurig as the titular Saul, who is a Sonderkommando in Auschwitz, and these were the people who would lead the prisoners into the gas chambers and then clean them up afterwards. Not the best job in the world, perhaps the worst job known to humanity of all time. Mm-hmm. But amongst the bodies, he finds a boy and believes this to be his son. And he then proceeds to find a rabbi in order to give the boy a proper Jewish burial. But while this is going on, in the background, you have the daily horrors of the Holocaust in Auschwitz, as well as sort of there's a plan going on of an uprising. So a few weeks ago, we talked about Trumbo. And I know it's a completely different part of history, completely on a completely different scale. But we were saying that Trumbo, which was about sort of... communist scare in Hollywood, the Hollywood 10, people are blacklisted. And me and Helen were saying, this is a kind of part of history that a lot of people don't know about, and it's so interesting to see it on film. The Holocaust is probably the most documented historical event of the 20th century, along with World War II. You've got so many documentaries, accounts. Anne Frank's diary is one of the biggest selling books of all time. Mm-hmm. You've got the very public Nuremberg trials, and then in film, Schindler's List, Life is Beautiful, The Pianist. So my question is, what makes Son of Saul relevant, and why is it different from other accounts of the Holocaust and other Holocaust films?
Mm. Well, I mean, I didn't personally know anything about the Sonderkommandos. It's probably okay. A little bit of my own ignorance. But that was truly heartbreaking for me to see on film. I don't think... Oh, I don't know if it is on film in other places. Do you guys know that?
I think there is one film, but it completely escapes me. Most of it are actually literary accounts. Mm. I think one of them done by Primo Levi, who was the Saved and the Drowned, I think it was called. I can't... The Drowned and the Saved. Yeah. So most of it is actually literature.
And also, I think it so tightly focuses on Saul, this film, in comparison to other Holocaust films I've seen, where it's kind of the whole scope and the scale of how awful it was. Just focusing so tightly on one person's struggle through it, I think, made it all the more interesting.
Definitely. And I think that's very much part of it. The filmmaking here is on show as well of the subject matter, because the film's entirely in shallow focus, so only the foreground isn't focused, the rest of the background's completely blurry.
Yeah, that's amazing, especially in the first shot.
Yeah.
It's like completely blurred.
And then he gradually steps into view. But yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a film where it's been like that the whole way through. And we'll talk more about this in more detail as we go along, but the camera's constantly moving. And so we said that the actor of Saul, Geza Rurig, Apologies if we've mispronounced your name, but he's not only is he definitely in every scene, he's pretty much in every shot as well. Mm. And that must be quite difficult for an actor.
Yeah, would you know he's not a professional actor? Yeah, okay. He's like, he's done a lot of studying about the Holocaust, and he's a like writer, poet, and things. And
he's written two books actually about the Holocaust, and I think a collection of poetries as well. As he stayed in Auschwitz for 1 year when he was studying in Poland, because I think since 2001 he was it's called a Shomer in Yiddish. I'm assuming he's a watchman or a custodian. Okay. In a Jewish chapel in New York, that where Nemes found him.
Oh, okay.
As well, so he's definitely invested in this
story.
He's
bringing a lot of background into it, and I think you can really see that in his face, because it's almost a wordless portrayal, isn't it? His journey through.
Very much.
He very rarely speaks, but the whole story is just told through his expression.
His emotion, yeah.
His emotion.
There's very little dialogue as a whole, I think, from a lot of the people in the film. I also loved that you know nothing about him. Like, you don't know anything about his past. I mean, a lot of we're saying what's this different from other Holocaust films. I find in general Holocaust films are very... there's an example from The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas with the... there's the older prisoner, and he talks to the boy about, I used to be a doctor. And in these films, a lot of them talk about, I used to be this. None of them used to be anything. They're just prisoners in Auschwitz.
It's not about what they've lost. It's just about what they're currently
experiencing. What they've become.
And I think most of them as well, like, if you look at their faces, and if you look at specifically Saul's face as well, it's ageless. I mean, you can never decide how old he is. If he's handsome or ugly, or if he's smart even, or intellectual, there's nothing. It's just a shell that you see. And there's all this almost catatonic expression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even when he sees the boy in the surviving the Zyklon B inhalation, and then obviously very early on being choked by one of the SS doctors... It's vacant. His face is completely, like, there's no emotion that you can perceive.
I think that's the thing. It's so numb. It's beyond emotion. The things that are happening are so terrible that there aren't any tears left, really, amongst these men. And, it's all more heartbreaking for that.
Yeah. I think to an extent there's some parallels there with The Revenant, in a weird way, where, because I thought that Leonardo DiCaprio's character, he's more of a character, I guess, than Saul, but he's still kind of... he could be anyone, and it's easier for the audience to become that person and to experience the things they're experiencing when they're more there's less we know about them.
Yeah,
it's easier to project
ourselves
onto them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's true here. But I think it's really important the shallow focus in the film, because as he wanders around the camp, you know there's stuff going on. You hear screams and orders, like. It's like a mix of German, Yiddish.
You see naked skin all the time
definitely.
In the background as well.
Yeah, it just... But the focus being on Saul, it's in the periphery.
It. Yeah.
It's not unimportant, but when I was actually looking at the title card at the beginning where it says kind of what you should look out for, it just said strong threat. And I was like, how are we watching a film in this nature? And the only thing that it says is strong threat.
Yeah.
Because you don't actually see any of the horror,
very little,
really.
Yeah.
It's all just... forming the backdrop.
See, the fact that you don't see it as well, because I think I was reading a Mark Kermode review about this as well, and he made like an excellent point. It's almost a box, because obviously the ratio is 4-3.
Yeah.
And within that box, you'd expect, you mostly see Saul, like he is in the foreground, but the fact that everything is in the background and you hear it as well, and you kind of can distinguish figures, kind of not. But most of it, because sound is coming out and you hear doors closing, screams, footsteps and everything, it broadens your horizon even more. If you look at something like Schindler's List, who, had massive bunch of extras that were meant to kind of symbolize the amount of people that were killed. Son of Saul has one guy in front, like one Sonderkommando, and the rest of the victims are in the background. But because you can hear most of them, you understand the scale even better.
Yeah.
So the suffering is more expressionistic than it is explicit, which I think is where the movie really hits home in many ways.
Definitely, yeah. I think as well, there's this whole thing of that a lot of people have been critical of Holocaust films in the past, that the Holocaust cannot be captured, like the horror of that, of what happened there, can never be shown and recreated, and some people think it shouldn't either. And there's this whole thing of, should it be sensationalized, like what happens in those camps. And I think the film gets around that by not showing you. You just have, and it's the whole thing as well, like what you don't see is always worse than what you do see, and what you imagine is always worse. So I think the opening scene is the perfect use of that, where Saul is leading people to their deaths, leading people to the gas chamber, which I thought was quite a very bold statement from a Holocaust film to open with a scene of people being killed in a gas chamber. Yeah. And he leads them in and you hear banging and screaming, and then it cuts, and then he's cleaning
it. The horror of that was unbelievable. And just not seeing it, not even seeing the look on those people's faces.
They think they're having a shower. And they hang up their clothes.
Even before, the lies that, because the Sonder Commando have been accused of being half victims, half murderers.
Yeah.
Which Gezaro has explicitly, well, kind of categorically stated, no, they are 100% victims. But when you hear the German SS Commando saying, don't worry, like, come to me personally after your shower, just hang your clothes, you're going to find them again, and you see the Sonder Commando going around helping them as well, undressed. You're like, oh my, I know what's coming.
And then they take all their clothes off their face as soon as they're in the room, like, right, get the clothes, and they take the possessions.
I can't imagine what being a Sonder Commando would do to your state of mind. And I think that Saul's state of mind is significantly altered. Yeah. He's not like acting rationally at all throughout the process of the film, really. It's just a really interesting look at that position within a camp. They're the only people that really know the truth of what's going on.
Absolutely. And they know what's going to happen to them as well, because they have a limited time as Sonder Commando.
And I read that basically they exterminate the Sonder Commando, and then the new Sonder Commando come in and clear up the old Sonder Commando.
The endless cycle of violence. And this is all before the title.
Yeah.
So that happens, and then you get Son of Saul, and it's like, whoa, you're in for some kind of ride. So what did you think about the actual plot of the film? So the main plot is he finds a boy who he believes to be his son, and he needs to find a rabbi to have a proper burial. What did you think about that? Why do you think that was relevant? Did it help the film represent the Holocaust in a way you haven't seen it before? Because for me, it was very much about just trying to hold on to something that you've lost. Like, in his past life, Jews died, would have a proper Jewish burial, and he doesn't get that anymore. So it's just the sort of the effort to try and recreate his past and to hold on to something.
Yeah, he's clinging on to a shred of humanity. Yeah. And I think, it's misguided, because someone says to him during the film, you're caring more about the dead than the living. Yeah. People are dying for him trying to get this boy proper burial. And I think Saul turns and said, we're already dead.
Yeah.
You know, they're between the two. And it's him kind of, I think, that's very interesting. Him holding on to that one shred of humanity of giving this boy a proper burial and not letting him be disrespected.
Yeah.
I think different prisoners have different coping mechanisms. Like, the ones that are planning their escape obviously cling on to freedom, whereas Saul himself doesn't much care about his own freedom because, like you said, in his mind, they're already dead. Like, they can't do anything to rejoin society at this point. Obviously, the war is still going on. And interestingly enough, we don't even know when this was going on. We don't even know if it was the final year of the war or just the beginning of the concentration camps.
Yeah.
So they could be looking at a long kind of a long way till the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, his burial of the boy is not just a threat of humanity. I think it's him clinging on to hope that his job hasn't made him so numb that a body is just a body, that a body is just a piece, which is the word that they constantly use.
Yeah, wow. That was horrible. I don't know. Is that accurate? Is pieces the
I
term
actually don't
used?
Know.
I imagine it would be. I think there's a lot of research going into this film. And as you said, the actor of Saul knows a lot himself. And I think this isn't a film where they've just think, oh yeah, that'll do. I think there's so much thought and care put into this film. There's a famous story I heard once about a woman who, I don't know if she escaped a concentration camp or was let free or something, and she was, like, obviously starving, so hungry, and she came across a farm, and the farmer offered her pork, and she refused it because she's Jewish and it's not kosher, and they said, why? Like, you've gone through so much, why can't you have it? And she sort of said, oh, if I don't have my beliefs, what's left, kind of thing. And I think that's the same thing with Saul, like, if I don't hold on to this thing that's so sacred to me, then what's the point of still living? So that's really good. Really nice way to bring about the whole Jewish aspect as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of, sorry to interrupt, but there's a lot of aspects in it that are very much taken out of the Torah and the Bible, especially some of the inmates' names. Like one of them is named Abraham. And also, I thought it was interesting because Abraham, who was the leader of his command, I can't remember.
Yeah. I think often little facts like that are confusing because the journey is so silent and because none of it makes sense what's going on.
I was going to ask you, that was one of my questions. Were you ever confused about like titles and who was who?
Yeah, I thought
partly because of the way it's filmed, it's almost like found footage, shaky cam at times.
You don't ever get too clear a shot of anyone's face, even when they're talking, because you're looking at Saul. So, yeah, I do think that the people around him become quite blurred, and you don't necessarily know who's who and what role they play. Yeah, absolutely, I think so.
Yeah, Nemes has said, actually, that one of his main focus during that film was actually to do lack of information. Limit your intake of information, because that's what a prisoner would be. He wouldn't know certain things, or he wouldn't know certain people, and you have to always be in the dark.
Like, arrival on the camp, you're in Saul's position. You've got to find out what's going on and learn your place quickly, because it's that or you don't make it.
Mm.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a scene where he goes to the sort of female section, the women's quarters, and there's a woman he meets who gives him what he needs to get, and she sort of attempts to hold his hand and he sort of snaps it away.
Mm.
I got from that maybe was she, do you think, a wife or a sister or former lover or something? I think it's hinted at that. That's what I got from it anyway. I'm not sure because he only saw it once, but...
Yeah, again, it's ambiguous, isn't it? And I think it's kind of purposefully so. You don't know. It's clear that they have had some kind of relationship outside of this camp. And to see him pull his hand away from her, from human tenderness, just shows you how far he's gone.
I think it adds to what we were saying, that he's not, we don't know anything about him, but I think he doesn't know anything about himself anymore.
Yeah.
That this is his, he's not a husband or a wife anymore, they're not husbands or wives anymore, these are just prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And he just is so confused and just like, no, I can't have that life anymore.
Yeah.
See, it's kind of strange because I'm kind of, I agree with your latter point, but not the first one, because I think the woman, yes, you're right, there is a sort of familiarity between the two of them, but I think it's mostly maybe it could be the woman trying to have some human contact as well.
Yeah.
And really kind of forcing herself onto him.
Yeah.
Just because she is that desperate to touch somebody else, especially of the opposite sex as well. And Saul, you're right, he is that far gone, so numb and so kind of catatonic, expressionless, that he kind of pulls away, mostly because he's like, no, I have something else, you are not my salvation, this dead boy is my salvation, which is even more heartbreaking if you think about it, because again, it's the dead take priority over the living. So it's, he denies himself probably a primal urge as well as a man.
Mm.
So, Ursi, you mentioned before we started that you rewatched Schindler's List and The Pianist very recently.
Yeah.
How did they compare?
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
To this film. We mentioned earlier a little bit about the word, we've used the word sensationalising, and but
yeah,
how, what do you think?
I think Schindler's List, as much as I do kind of marvel at what Spielberg did, bringing the Holocaust to the mainstream in such a way, I felt that there's, and I think that's something that Geza Rohrig said in an interview, there is a bad guy and a good guy in that kind of movie, and at the end there is a sense of liberation, there is a sense of freedom, and through catharsis of violence, in the end you come out with a positive note, especially when the Schindler Jews were liberated, and you get that end sequence where they all lay the stones on his... Exactly. And in comparison, Son of Saul just is not nihilistic, to say that. Like, it does give you some semblance of hope, but Nemes doesn't want to trick you into thinking that there's good guys and bad guys, especially because he focuses on the Sonderkommando.
Who were
and you
both.
Exactly. And if we look at the pianist actually, looking at it, at one point, Vladek Spielman, who's Adrian Brody, who's the main character, hides in Warsaw, right in front of a hospital, and I think a police station.
Yep.
And he watches the Warsaw Uprising.
Okay.
And is only an observer, watches people dying on the street, and that kind of reminded me of Saul.
Okay.
Watching the uprising in Auschwitz and only being an observer, not really taking any part in it, because what he wants to do is take the rabbi that he's found.
Right, yeah.
And take the child and bury it, whereas the rest of them run to freedom, his main priority. So I think it was an interesting...
Comparison.
And but the thing is, like, Laszlo Nemes, he's 39 years old.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg and Roman Polanski did those two movies well into their 50s or 60s, I'm not quite sure. And to have his first movie...
Yeah, it's an unbelievable debut.
Best foreign language film at the Oscars, Grand Prix at Cannes, best foreign language film at the Golden Globes. It's been rewarded.
Yeah. And justly, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. There's one scene in that I really remember from The Pianist, which is when the Nazis, like, they make the Jews dance for them. And there's a very similar scene in Saul.
Yeah.
And that's just the absolute humiliation and dehumanizing.
Yeah.
It's pretty horrendous.
It's really, really, really hard to watch that scene.
Yes. It goes on for quite a while as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Uncomfortably long.
Yeah. It's just that kind of awful that is in your stomach. And
I want this to stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the fact that the camera is behind Saul as well, and you see the the commanders, the SS guy, grabbing him by the collar and dancing him along. I was like...
And there's this moment in Saul's face where he realises to survive this incident, he has to pretend he's in on this joke with them and try and link arms and just
horrible. Really awful. Yeah. Jenny, you mentioned to me before we started that, because I was talking about the plot point of them sneaking in a camera to try and capture the horrors, get them out to the outside world and show them what's really happening.
Yeah.
And you said that's true.
So there were, it's true. So there was obviously a faction of people who were clinging on to this idea of, like, revolting against the system and getting it out there, and that there would be a saviour and that they would survive. And yes, they found a camera and they were taking photographs of what it was like in there, because they knew that the outside world didn't know what was happening to them. And these photos are available on the internet.
Okay.
You can look them up and see them, and they're very similar to what they recreate within the film. Yeah, it's all, and this whole kind of revolution that's in the background of the film is also a real event that happened in October 1944.
Excellent.
There's also another, because you reminded me, at some point Saul actually to kind of blackmail a prisoner to not say what he's doing with the boy.
Yeah.
Says to him, "I will tell the SS where you're buried, all your writings."
Yeah.
About that's actually true. That's one of their main sources about the Sonderkommando experience. They're called the Auschwitz Scrolls, and they found them around the ovens as well, buried. Oof. So you can, I think you can also probably find them on the internet, although
it's going to be a tough read.
this idea of the camera, I think, is quite telling of the whole filmmaking process. I think that it can be only be captured by someone who was actually there,
mm-hmm.
because this film, I mean, it does attempt to recreate it, but not in a sense of showing you everything, as we mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. I think the whole thing of the camera used as a weapon is quite interesting, and that the only way they could do it was someone actually inside there with a camera, not trying to recreate it. You need the real thing.
Yeah.
Which I think it goes, what we're saying, that Schindler's List is kind of a sort of more black and white version, literally black and white, but also like good yeah. and bad, this is what we think it might look like kind mm-hmm. of thing. So before we move on to sort of discussing the third act stuff and the end of the films, anything you want to add?
Yeah.
To anyone that hasn't seen it.
About the soundtrack, which I think yeah. is amazing, because there isn't really a soundtrack.
Yeah, no, it's non-digestic sound. Yeah.
Just the noise of the camp, and it's so harrowing just to hear that. And you're not given this score to lull you into an emotional yes. like catharsis, an emotional release.
As you say, Schindler's List is a very famous score.
Yeah, there's
which is
none
a beautiful
of that.
Score, and but it, this doesn't need it.
It's yeah, it's not emotionally kind of exploitative in that way. It doesn't try and make you feel anything with music. It just gives you the reality, and yeah, it's incredible.
I think there's one scene actually with the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that seems so alien. In the women's section, and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I think one of the best made films of the year so far.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A tough watch, but well worth it.
Yeah, definitely worth it, and it goes by quite nicely.
Yeah,
it's not,
doesn't feel long.
Yeah. It's got quite a nice pace to it, considering it's quite a harrowing subject matter. It's mm-hmm. quite pacey.
I think that's something to do with the way that it's filmed as well, because you're constantly moving on this journey with Saul, and he's never anywhere for too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think by the time it was in the middle of the film, it's like, is this all? It seems like it's all one take. You know,
it does have that feel.
Sometimes it cuts and you're like, okay, I can breathe a bit.
Mm. Yeah.
But then it's another 4 minutes of constant.
Mm.
You're like, you're just by every time the camera cuts to a different scene, you feel exhausted.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're in on it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, by the end, you're just wiped.
You are
absolutely,
indeed.
Yeah. I think, I completely agree that this is so, you're, for all, as harrowing as it is, it's so interesting to see this on film. Mm. And I think it is still relevant.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think we always need to remember
what
it's
happened.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a perfect way to capture that with doing something new with it as well, which is really impressive.
And to also remember people that you don't necessarily think of.
Like the Sonder Commando.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're going to talk, if you haven't seen the film, go out and see it and then come back, listen to the last sort of 10 minutes or so of the podcast. So the whole uprising plot is so in the background for most of the film that I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
For most of it. I was so involved with Saul and the corpse of the boy and how he's going to get that happen. And then suddenly they escape.
It happens.
It happens, and it's so like, it's like a thriller all of a sudden. It's so, there's gunfire, there's shouting and there's
dogs.
Running, dogs. Yeah, it is like
explosions.
A sort of, it's like a Bourne movie. Honestly, the camera's shaking everywhere and you're so involved, and they run through, get to the forest. What did you think about that, the decision to actually show the escape?
Well, I think, you know, on a purely personal level, you want to see that they can fight back and that they can get some semblance of their dignity back from these people. And although, obviously, it doesn't end well for them, I think reading up of this was a true event, they killed a few SS guards and hurt some and injured some and got a tiny bit of their own dignity.
Yeah, got some of their life back for a second there.
Yeah.
And then, naturally, he loses the body in the river.
Which I think is not actually... He didn't really lose it, because if you look at it... I mean, the river has a... Like, water in general has a very kind of spiritual power.
There's something of Moses in that, I thought, as well. The child in the river.
Yeah, and then when he buries it, not in the way he would like, but in a way he does let it go, because he can just swim back. Although you don't even know if he can swim, because the way he's struggling, is it the current?
Yeah.
Is it the way that he doesn't drown
at that point?
Yeah.
And then I thought the most kind of telling point of the funeral ending, his mourning kind of ending, is the rabbi taking him out. Not any other prisoner. It's the rabbi saving him.
Is he a rabbi?
Well,
the one that saves him.
Oh.
There's another one that.
So
I
he
don't
thinks
think
he's found a rabbi. Mm. There's a really horrifying scene where you know, they don't have the oven, like the gas chambers ready for the people coming, and so they just sort of execute them in this horrendous kind of fire. You can't really tell what's going on, can you?
That's quite confusing.
Gunshot. It's really confusing. And during it all, Saul thinks, this is my chance. One of these men is going to be a rabbi and I can get them out of this situation. They can help me. And I think, you know...
He's an opportunist, to be honest. He's like, yeah, I'm a rabbi. Yeah, this is how I'm going to get out of this.
Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And when he looks at him with that... Because you know that he can't, that there's a chance he might not be. Saul just flatly refuses to acknowledge that, even when the rest of the prisoners say, yeah, no, he's not, you know. Yeah. And when you see that vacant face on that, on the rabbi's inverted commas, on that guy's face when Saul nearly has the boy buried and tells him to recite the Kaddish, and then the guy just looks at him in a vacant, like, says two words and then looks at him, and then you can see Saul going, oh no, this is I messed this up completely.
Yeah.
This man is not who... Yeah.
Really, really sad.
Your heart sinks when he realises that.
Yeah, it really
does. They managed to find, like, solitude in an abandoned barn, it seems like. And
so this is all fact as well.
Okay.
I mean, obviously Saul's not a real character, but this is all fact. They escaped the camp and they sought refuge in a barn.
Okay.
And they were kind of escaped.
Yeah, there's discussion as well of joining the Russians for a while. We can join the Russian army should be on its way. We should be able to join them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saul, who's never shown any interest in this rebellion whatsoever, really. He's it's all just been in the background for him as well as us, as I said earlier, that he doesn't want to rebel. He doesn't really want to accept that he's in this situation, I think. But he's there, not paying attention to anyone. And he sees that there's a boy that sort of appears, and only he can see him. And there's sort of a sort of long close-up of Saul, kind of Ingmar Bergman style, really long, big close-up. And he smiles for the first time.
Yeah.
Why do you think he smiles? It's probably the first sign of emotion from Saul for the whole the whole hour, 47 minutes.
Honestly, I think it's... And that's... I think he's so... In his own, I think I just buried this boy, not in the way that I wanted to, but I just did. And he sees a boy that maybe kind of resembles the one that he buried as well. So I'm thinking he just looks at him and is like, oh, you're at peace.
Yeah.
I'm at peace.
Yeah. And that there is a happy life outside of what we've been in. And this boy
is
going on, and he will live and grow up, hopefully, in a time unlike this. Yeah,
definitely. When I first saw it, and because the boy, Saul's the only one that sees the boy, and the boy runs off, and we follow the boy, and the boy goes up, and as he runs around, there's an army waiting that grabs the boy, and then the army runs in and shoots the escaped prisoners.
And that's the first time you leave Saul, really, as well.
Yeah. I thought that it meant the boy had spied for the army, that, like, the reason they sort of grabbed, like, they were waiting there as if they've said to the boy, can you go there and sort of check, kind of thing. I'm not sure.
I thought that as though he was running off and you could hear the boots coming.
Like, oh,
but then I saw the way that the other soldier, I thought that might have been Saul for a second. And then I was like, oh, wait, hang on. but grabbed him and sort of kept him quiet. And I thought, you know, maybe not. Maybe he's just caught in this crossfire of what's going on.
Mm.
Yeah, because let's not forget Auschwitz, the concentration camp, was close to a town as well. Yeah. So he could very well be just taken in a stroll.
But then he does run away off into the distance to the sound of gunshots and doesn't really bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
But you can probably read that he's just as numb as the prisoners. You know, the war has made this child
For 7 years or so by this point. So it's just,
so normal.
Yeah, and you said it there, Jenna, actually, that this is the first time we leave Saul.
Mm.
That we follow someone else. And the final shot, we don't even see Saul die, who we've been following for the whole thing.
Mm.
The final shot is the boy running off into the distance. What do you think they made that decision to have Saul for the whole film, but then the last moment leave him?
Well, I think that's when you do know Saul's journey's over then. As soon as the camera leaves Saul, you know you're never going back to him. And I think that was important, not to have this kind of... because the film's been numb, it's not been emotionally exploitative. I think to show Saul's death would defeat the object of it. And I think it's much better to have that, like with all the violence in the film thus far, in the periphery, in the background.
Mm. I think, again, it has... You're right, absolutely. It would defeat the object of the movie. And I think it has a nice... I think that's the moment where the movie, ironically as well, I might add, but the movie is somewhat uplifting.
Absolutely.
I hate to use that word. I'm sure there's another more appropriate word to use, but it's the child runs away, but you're right, Saul's journey ended. Mm-hmm. He's outside. Yeah. He's not in the concentration camp. He has done what he set out to do. And you leave him smiling. You leave him with a sense of relief. And I think showing his death would just kind of reduce him again to just another one of those prisoners when he's so much more than that during the movie. He's he's regained his soul. Or at least a fragment of it. I'm not sure.
And I think the director said this film wasn't about survival.
Yeah, I saw that quote as well. Yeah.
It was about kind of humanity, and that's the resolution you see for Saul. And you're never going to see him survive. Hardly anyone survived. Yeah.
You see him being human, which he hasn't been for much of the film, really. Yeah, absolutely. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Go and see the film. If you're listening now, you've probably seen the film. And
see it again.
See it again. Keep supporting this kind of movie making.
Yeah.
And watch out for Laszlo Nemes, because if that's his first movie, I cannot wait to see. There's been a plethora of first time directors that have really made things like that, like Son of Saul and The Witch. So I think we're moving into a great kind of time for independent filmmaking with subjects that are tough to look at they open your world. Well, they kind of try and open your perspective a little bit more and try and broaden your horizons. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And there's great that people are still finding things to say about these historical events that are so we think are so familiar to us now, but then we see something like this and there's so much we actually don't know. Still much to uncover. So thank you for listening. Join us again next week. And also, if you've got any questions for us, we'll be letting you know what film we'll be reviewing in the next few days. If you tweet us at Curzon Cinemas with hashtag Curzon Podcast. And if you like the podcast, review us on iTunes. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.